Welcome to Put Simply. I am Charlie, your AI-generated host. This week, we're chatting about all things AI. Your human hosts will be on shortly. You're listening to Put Simply.
Welcome to Put Simply. I'm your human host, Erdem Koch. This week, all things artificial intelligence, or more commonly known as AI. AI has exploded recently, particularly with the launch of ChatGPT. But what is AI? What does it actually mean for society? And more importantly, what does it mean for businesses and for governments? How do we regulate the AI sector? How do countries cooperate to come up with best practices? And what are some of the questions we need to be asking in this new, emerging and fast-evolving space? This week, we speak with Ayesha Piotti, who wears many hats in the AI space. We'll let her introduce herself. I'm your host, Erdem Koch.
And I'm Ozan Ibrahim.
Welcome to Put Simply.
Ayesha, welcome to Put Simply. It's great to have you on our show. Could you start with telling us a little bit about yourself and what it is that you do?
Thank you so much, Ozan. It's a real pleasure to be here. So as you said, I'm Ayesha Piotti. I am managing partner at the Swiss-based firm Reg Horizon, where our focus is to build trust in emerging technologies through promoting policy solutions, building capacity, and also facilitating dialogue between governments, academia, business, and civil society. I also hold another position as head of the annual AI Policy Summit at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology, ETH Zurich. In fact, back in 2019, we felt that the societal expectations were evolving and there was a lack of clear rules around AI that could potentially present a major challenge to businesses and consumers worldwide. And it was also clear to us that the solutions we needed, we could only have them if we had a multi-stakeholder dialogue. So, in light of that, we set up this platform along with ETH Zurich Center for Law and Economics. And our aim really was to, on the one hand, raise awareness about the topic. Secondly, to facilitate an unbiased exchange on the risks of artificial intelligence. And thirdly, to explore also relevant policy and academic solutions that we could have to address them. And of course, this happened much before the ChatGPT. So I'm quite humbled that now, 5 years on, the AI Policy Summit is by far Switzerland's largest global AI policy discussion platform. We have a community that spans more than 100 countries, and we have strategic partners, including sort of Swiss government, UNESCO, the United Nations ITU, and many, many others. So, this is all keeping me busy.
Ayesha, it's really interesting you mentioned the whole craze, I guess, around AI post ChatGPT, and that a lot of people, including yourself and your organization, have actually been having this discussion around AI for much longer because pre-ChatGPT, I guess most of us thought of AI as human robots, right? And now AI has become synonymous with ChatGPT and everything around that. So let's just take a step back for a second and a bit of a zoom out. Can you put simply for us, what is AI?
Great question. Thanks for that. Now, I must say that if you go to the technical circles, the definition of really artificial intelligence is often a point of contention. And there are sort of many definitions out there, but just for simplicity, I'll start first with the definition which is most used, which is used by the OECD and recently was also adopted by the European Union. Now, what does it really say? It's talking about artificial intelligence as machine-based system that can, for a given set of human-defined objectives, make predictions, recommendations, or decisions. Influencing real or virtual environments. Right? But now I come back to the simply put part, right? I actually often think of it as, algorithmic-based decision-making systems, right? And what are they? I mean, these are really computer-based systems or machines that can essentially mimic human intelligence, So these systems can perform tasks such as understanding language, recognizing patterns, and making decisions. And a couple of things to maybe mention right here as well. I think training, it is important to know that training these models require a large amount of data and compute capacity. And maybe later on, we'll talk a little bit about it because certain lots of discussions are actually linked with that. The other thing is now, that was artificial intelligence as a whole. Now let's talk about ChatGPT. ChatGPT itself is a form of generative artificial intelligence, which is a subset of AI as a whole. And what does it do? It focuses on really creating new content rather than just analyzing the data and making decisions. So for example, it can actually generate text, images, music, right, media. And whereas, for example, traditional AI could potentially like identify a photograph, Gen AI can in fact create a realistic image. So that's what I would say, hopefully, you know, gives you a bit of a feeling of what we are talking about here.
We talk about it as a bit of a sudden explosion in terms of AI, becoming basically something that everybody is discussing. I'd be really interested to know your views about why this has suddenly come about. I mean, you mentioned, and I think when you dig deeper into it, AI technology has been around for a very long time, but it's only recently that everybody has started to talk about it. We're going to get into some regulations. A lot of questions have been asked around the risks and all of these sorts of things. Why right now are we talking about it?
Well, you know, it's true that artificial intelligence, of course, has been there for decades. And it is also true that some of the risks were being talked about and some of the ethical concerns that were around this technology were also talked about, maybe not for decades, but is certainly for the last 10 years or more. And but what has really happened, I think what changed was the launch of ChatGPT to the wider public. And what did it really do? It was the first time that people could really see firsthand, first and foremost, the power of this technology, but also, you know, with a few months on, also see some of the drawbacks and the risks. And actually, when you think about it, I think this was really the aim. And there was an interview recently also by Sam Altman, and he was talking about the fact that, no, one of the reasons why OpenAI decided to go this way was also because they wanted to start a debate. They wanted to have attention and focus on the development of this technology for a wider audience, because and they knew that there were risks. They knew they were that this was not perfect for society, but that was sort of part of the plan, right? And actually, now that we're talking about it, if it's okay, maybe it's good for the audience to also hear about what are some of the risks that are being talked about. Would that be a good idea to maybe share right now, right? So when you look at this, I think I would give you a summary of more or less what the risks are. And first and foremost, we have to understand that these risks are coming from ethical concerns. They're coming from economic concerns. And they're also coming from, basic concerns about human rights. So, you know, in terms of what is being talked about, I talked about data in the past. So one of the main risks or something which is raised as an issue with these large language models is infringement on privacy. So often they are taking data of people from the net, from all over the place, without really having consent. The other thing that is important to know is that you do have magnification as a result of these large language models of biases in this society. And if then they are used to make decisions and they're applied widely, that can potentially lead to more discrimination. And of course, that's an issue for the society as a whole when you look at. The other one, which I feel, which really came to forth when we looked at ChatGPT, was the large scale misinformation. So, you know, one of the things which is happening, and you know, like you can have now chatbots making some phone calls, right? And you don't know that this is really a chatbot that you're speaking to, and the chatbot can potentially say anything, and you don't know about it. Similarly, with bots that are there on Twitter and all, you can have basically a lot of misinformation. You have things about deep fakes, which is, of course, a huge problem also for the political arena. Then the next one, which people are really worried about, is the fact that as a result of this, when you don't know something is real, something is not, and if it's used in a wider context, you can get manipulation of behavior. And there you have, you know, maybe people have seen the Netflix documentaries like The Social Dilemma, The Great Hack, and they show that and share that quite well. Coded Bias is another one if people haven't seen. But that is the issue here with regards to, and then with the elections coming up in the US as well, it's like, how are we using these, you know, technologies and artificial intelligence to now manipulate people and therefore undermine our democracies. The other one I would say is, of course, the mass surveillance, because, you know, with things like emotional recognition or facial recognition, if it's used in public spaces, it's a big issue as well. But the one which I believe is really going to the core of it, because when ChatGPT was launched, and very soon there was all this noise about, wow, you know, it can take the bar exam, wow, it can actually code, you know, it can be used to create new music. And of course, there was a highlight of the economic concerns. So what does this mean for the jobs of people who are today, you know, music artists? You saw in the US and Hollywood, there were big strikes. You know, people really realized, oh my God, you know, if I'm a lawyer and this thing can take the bar exam, does that mean that my job is going to stay? So there's this huge part, which is also the economic disruption that this technology potentially lead to. And that is why there was suddenly this, you know, focus on saying, well, you know, what should we do? And people just woke up, and then the first thing was, let's regulate this technology. We need to regulate, and we need to prepare. So that's a little bit what has been happening in that area.
So with all these risks, Aisha, comes the question of how do we treat this, right? And a lot of the answers are often found with any new technology, really, in regulation. So to that extent, how do you perceive the intersection of AI and regulation / governance, if you will?
You know, what I would say is that today, the whole artificial intelligence and basically also new technologies, how to regulate them, I would say is one of the biggest challenges we face today. And I'd say it up front, nobody has the real answer. But I can share with you some of what has been going on, what are the reflections in this area. Now, in order to do that, I think it'd be nice to think about it in a timeline perspective, right? So let's start way back and say, well, first and foremost, as I said, there were ethical concerns that were coming through about generally before even the launch of ChatGPT about artificial intelligence, using of these machine-based systems, what are their impacts on human rights and privacy and all that. Now, as a result of that, I think the very first principles that were set forward were by the OECD in 2018, which formed the basis of sort of some guidance, which said, well, you know, we should be looking at these, keeping in mind certain principles and how we develop and deploy these technologies. Then, and they formed the basis of many other, and if you look backwards, there was many, many principles and guidelines that started coming out from everywhere. And these were, but one thing which was very important about this is none of this is binding. So these are just recommendations, principles that were shared and how we should be. But, you know, there was this whole thing, let's develop this technology, let's move forward. Okay, we have these principles, we should look at them, but no law. Second thing, which I think is very important, was UNESCO. In November of 2021, 193 member states of the, you know, of United Nations signed what we call the Recommendations on Ethics by UNESCO. And this was a very important document because it was the first time it was not just the OECD world or people on their own. There was a kind of a general consensus that we at a global, in the global arena, need to look at this technology. And this was, of course, again, before the launch of the ChatGPT. Again, this is not something which is binding. So there was all these discussions about what should we do? Does it really mean that, you know, we are really going to have some kind of a guardrail or not? And essentially, if I just quickly can say, what were the main elements that are the most important ones, right? Which are guiding? What are these principles? So the principles, essentially, there are many, many, but you can distill them to a few of them. One of them is transparency. So if we're using this technology, we need to know what it is being used, how is it being used, what is the data that is being used, and that's something that that people need to understand. Those that are creating the technology need to ensure that there is a transparency about this. The second one is, of course, safety. And we'll talk maybe a bit later about it with this, you know, safety institutes now blooming everywhere. But essentially, it has to be safe. It has to be something which is essentially human-centric and allowing us to augment what we want to do and be safe for our next generation. The next one is non-discrimination, which I believe I've just mentioned as well, with the biases that can be exacerbated as a result of technology. So we need to make sure it doesn't make our world more to discriminate more some of those that are already discriminated against, or even introduce more discrimination. The next one is accountability, because one of the things which has been really happening is that there has been incredible adoption of the technology, but if something goes wrong, first and foremost, who is responsible? Is it the one who actually created it? Is the one who is the user? Is it the one that, you know, and that has been very unclear so far. So there was a big noise to say, well, who is accountable for this? And of course, as you can imagine, a lot of discussions. And last one is more about fairness or equity. Now, fairness, I'm not really very, everybody understands what's fair, but as you know, fairness depends, you know, on where you are and who you're talking to. So something can be fair for you, but not for me. So this is also all very subjective. So that's one point I wanted to make. Now, saying all that, we were talking about the principles, we're talking about these guidelines that came from UNESCO, and then there was, of course, a call to say, well, we really need to look at something binding, which means that there has to be accountability, there has to be. And that's where I would now bring in the, you know, EU. And the EU is the very first jurisdiction that proposed a binding legislation on artificial intelligence. And it's under the EU AI Act, right? And this one has recently, very recently been passed, and we probably don't have time to go into the details of that, but essentially it's a risk-based system and it's defining the AI. So for example, if you're using AI to sort out the spam inside of your email, well, you know, this will not be covered by something like the EU AI Act. If you are using a chat bot, then what a UAI would say, well, maybe we need to have a transparency. So if an old person, for example, is using a chat bot for some health advice, they need to be aware that they're talking to it. So those are transparency. Then there is a big high risk category that the EU AI Act highlights, right? So for example, if you're using it in healthcare, or you're using it in HR systems where you're deciding on hiring or firing, or you know, if you're using it for immigration or criminal justice system, then there are and there are a few others, like, you know, infrastructure which is required by government. So there are a few areas that were then highlighted and say these have a significant impact on us as citizens and society. These are classified as high risk, and therefore there are more requirements. And then, of course, EU AI Act is also looking at things which should be completely unacceptable or banned, such as social scoring and so on and so forth. So this was a big thing which was being discussed for the last 2 years. It's now been approved by the parliament. It's going to come into effect, in fact, a few months from now, with basically in terms of implementation, you have some transition periods that are given depending on what we're talking about, but maybe we don't have time for all of that. The other thing that I would just mention here is also the Council of Europe. The Council of Europe is also working on something which is called a binding convention on artificial intelligence. Now, for those of you who don't know what Council of Europe is, this is the body, it's actually a law-making body which has in the past, it has 46 member states. So it's not just the EU, but it's larger, and it has observers also from like the US and Japan and some other other countries as well. So it's broader. And this is the lawmaking body that, of course, came up with the Convention on Human Rights, the Convention on Cybersecurity, the very first privacy law. So this is, of course, has an impact. And they have now come up with a new proposal with regards to a binding convention again with regards to artificial. So this is a little bit what's been happening. And of course, the last point I'd make is that there are, of course, certain countries that are also going on their own to implement so regulation. So China comes to mind. China has recently, in the last year, come up with binding regulation for generative AI, privacy, also competition, a few others that are linked to this thing. And of course, Canada, Australia, there's many others that have pockets. And even in the United States, you have had, for example, not only the executive order that came from the President Biden and a lot of debates in the Senate, but you also had a certain states like California, like New York, that are coming up with binding sort of laws in certain areas like privacy or HR and stuff like that. So a lot of movement happening in this, and this is in terms of what's really there. And of course, what happened with ChatGPT and all of this is that there was suddenly a lot of pressure that was felt at the political level. Right. From the, for example, the so you had things like the G7, the G20 declarations, the Hiroshima process coming in Japan, the UK AI summit that happened with all the big tech players that were invited. So a lot of noise and a lot of sort of political movement now to say we've got to somehow manage the risks with the opportunities of this technology.
I think it's fair to say that, you know, we've all been around regulations for a long time, and regulations are made difficult in our experience, certainly, by two things, new emerging technologies and rapidly changing technologies, but also regulations that try and regulate beyond borders of sovereign countries. So when you think about those two realities that are very much applicable to AI, what would you say some of the challenges are in regulating AI, and also how are these challenges being addressed by governments?
Thanks for that question. I think it comes to the core of the problem that I said, which is that, you know, regulation and how we are going to regulate is one of the key challenges we have going forward. Now, you are very right. It's a fast-moving technology. And if you go just in a philosophical level, there has been in the past a lot of discussion with regards to, well, if we regulate, does that mean we cannot innovate? So there's always been this this discussion. Well, you know, why? And the second thing is, how do you regulate something which is moving so fast? And even the regulators don't know what this is all about. And then you can't come up with a regulation. So that has been a discussion, and essentially for some time. I think one of the things which is, of course, clear now is that there is this will to say, well, right, we understand that, but there has to be some guardrails we have to come up with. So that's the first thing, which I believe there's some consensus around. Because essentially, everybody has a common goal, right? The common goal is that we want to minimize the risk, but we also want to maximize the benefit. And we'll come maybe later to the benefits of the technologies as well. But at the same time, what is also very clear, we have to be realistic, is that societies have different value structures. They have different cultural norms. They have different legacies, even in terms of legislation. Right? So certain countries have civil law, the others have common law, and basically the way they will approach regulation will be different. So so it's not the what. We of course want to maximize, minimize, but we, on the other hand, it's the how. So many of the discussions are in terms of how, and there I would say we have to accept that there will be different geopolitical approaches in the how in how we will approach this. So if we think about it, EU for sure is coming with something a lot more prescriptive, you know, again, given its history, but perhaps EU, United States or Switzerland or UK or Singapore are thinking slightly differently. You know, and I think this is important to say, well, maybe we need to have an iterative way. Maybe we will go a lot more sector specific, use case specific, rather than maybe a horizontal law. So the first point I would say is the challenge is, of course, that you will not potentially get one a specific legislation across the globe. That will not happen. On the other hand, we do need to have some interoperability of these legislations, right? So because as you rightfully say, this is a technology that goes around, you know, it's basically is beyond the borders. And I think that there is some work that has been started now. And here I would say there's standards, international standards organizations are going to be playing a very key role in giving some guidance and not only just coming up with technical standards. So here we are talking about organizations such like ISO, IEEE, Sensenelec in Europe, NIST in the US. Now they are actually actively working on this issue, knowing that, well, we're not gonna have one legislation, but it's going to be, we probably will need standards to allow us to be interoperative. When you come back now to your question on what are some of the other challenges, I think another challenge that we, of course, have is that we do have today, when we look at the policy making, a very important point, which is that we have uneven participation in the debate. And as we know, when we have few people deciding for a large majority, it's never in the history tells us that it's a good thing. So when do I mean by uneven participation? And here I'd say one, it's even at the stakeholder level. So you do have this thing where we would say, well, policymakers are in the discussions. Maybe the very important big tech companies are in the discussion, but maybe we don't see much of the SMEs or smaller companies. Maybe we don't see much of academia. Maybe we don't. So I think this is clearly, or even youth, which is, of course, so there are issues around that. The other thing is there was many studies that have been conducted to say, okay, so let's look at all of these policy instruments, be it even guidelines, be it even principles that have been going, where are they really originating from? And what you realize when you put it on the map, there's a large part of the world which is not included in this debate. If you look, Africa is very, very little to be seen. Latin America, a lot of Central Asia is nowhere. And these decisions, of course, when you talk about harmonization, which is going to impact us all on, they need to be within this debate. So I think the other challenge we have is how do we ensure that we come up with something which is essentially also making sure that the voices of everybody is included to make something which is essentially then helpful for us as humanity. And the last challenge I think where we have is that of preparation. One thing we have seen, as we talked earlier also about the risks are not just about the human rights part, but also economic. And there is going to be, and no matter, like any technological revolution, there will be disruption in the society. And what we do need to do is to prepare ourselves. And what have we learned, for example, when we go back to the Industrial Revolution, we look at, for example, the polarization that is happening. Let's take an example of the United States, right? What do we see? We see that there is this polarization. Now we can say it's also because of algorithms and people in their bubbles and all, but a lot of it is also because as a result of the Industrial Revolution, there was a mismanagement of how basically the benefits of that was distributed. So you had the West and the East Coast, and then you had sort of this large belt where people were just left behind. I mean, the jobs were taken away, there was no skilling, reskilling, and the actual policies were not there. So I think we sort of are in the similar kind of place now where we need to sort of think about and say, well, there is going to be this change. We know it's coming. We know it will mean some disruption. And I'm not, I mean, the jury is still out, whether it's going to cut jobs overall or create jobs overall. I mean, there's all a big discussion about that. But overall, what we can all agree is there will be change and there will be disruption. And we need to absolutely manage that. And the second thing is, if we're going to come up with any kind of regulation, you will need to enforce it. In order to enforce it, you absolutely need to have the right people who have the right skills. There is this whole discussion about human will always be in the loop, right? We are going to have a, you know, it's going to augment us. But who is this human? How are we training this human? How does this human know what the pitfalls are with regards to being the human in the loop? You know, there's issues such as machine biases that you can have. How are we preparing them? So this is, for me, a huge, these are the challenges. So it's basically, on the one hand, about the harmonization. The second one really for me is with regards to the fact that we have this uneven participation. And the third one for me is more the preparation, and for which I strongly feel we need to really come up with resources and focus and a sort of sense of urgency, which I would like to see more of going forward.
Aisha, I want to pick up on something you said. I think that's hugely important. I think, you know, you mentioned people being nervous around losing their job, being, you know, kind of made redundant by all of this technology. There's a huge economic kind of benefit, but also in perceived disbenefit. When you talk to regulators and, you know, governments, the industry, etc., throughout the forums, what do you tell them about how we take people on this journey with us? Because I think one of the things that strikes me is, you know, you can have the best regulation in the world, but if you don't have the political will for it, and if you don't have a populace, general populace, who understands why that regulation is in place, who understands the benefit, et cetera, of AI, then this is going to be quite ineffective. So what type of advice do you give?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think, we were just discussing this very topic under the Swiss Internet Governance Forum, where we were looking at the preparatory side, or how do we bring, as you rightfully say, people on board? And I think here there's two aspects to it. There's one aspect is that you want, of course, ultimately the trust in the technology, so you're going to have adoption of the technology. And that it goes at the level of society as a whole, but it also goes in a level, let's take an example of a business. So you would like to use this technology in your HR systems, you would like to use it for supply chain, but you'd also like to use it for consumer focused sort of chatbots or whatever. And there's so much that you can do with it. And of course, there is a potential for having productivity gains and, you know, lower costs. But the fact is that you also need to manage your workforce, because the one thing that happens is people are like, okay, yeah, now you're doing this. Does that mean that I will not have a job anymore? So there is a sense of anxiety even within companies that can be created. And the second thing is you will lose their engagement if they think that, oh, they're working just with something which in 5 years down the line is just going to take away their job. Not even 5 years, frankly, 5 months. So what are companies doing? So one of the things which is very important, I think there's three pillars to this. And it actually, you can extrapolate that at a company level, but also at a society level, that I believe that is really important. And in some cases being done well, and in some cases not being done so well. And the first one is, in order for you to have that trust and the right adoption that you would like to have, first and foremost, awareness building. You need to make sure that people are understanding, and that's at the society level, but also at the company level. What is this all about? What does this really mean? What are your objectives? Where are you using it? Because what has happened so far is that things have been, you know, AI has been used in insurance. I mean, there are studies that have been conducted where they've seen that people, like most people know, that AI is used to unlock your phone through the facial recognition. But 90% of the people don't know that it is also used in insurance to allocate your benefits. So, you know, there are things where people need to understand, because otherwise, the minute they don't, it leads to this anxiety. So the same goes for society. The same goes then for a company, where you got to make sure your people are understanding what is being used, how is it being, what data is being used, are there biases, are there not? So all of that. The second element, and that is an element which is extremely key, which we also see, in countries where regulations are made, but they are people stick to it. Switzerland being a great example of direct democracy. Why do people stick to the regulations? And it's great. Is that there is involvement. So you need to involve the people in the decisions you're making. Similarly, go to a company. If you're going to use it in the HR system, and many companies, bigger ones, are actually putting that into place where they're saying, well, you know, we need to involve the employees and get their buy-in. So that's the same. And same goes for the bigger level. And in there, there's another element of it, which is also training, right? So by training, you can actually do that as well. And many companies are, in fact, using AI to offer a lot of training to their own people. And I think this is something we can do also at a level of the society, because just to give one example for a second is about, let's say we are moving more and more now away from jobs to skills. So there is much more focus on skills, and that, in, if you think about it, there are new AI technologies which will help people find jobs based on their skills, not so much on the industry they worked on. So, for example, somebody who's worked is looking for a job in a clothing shop could potentially, this AI technology can find somebody who's an air hostess in air industry, because they both have the skills of customer service in common. So we need, so one of the things I'd like to say is we can use actually technology itself to minimize the disruption and help you. And I think companies are doing that, and governments as well as societies need to do more of that. And the last part of what I think is the most important is enforcement. So what we need to have is an accountability, which goes a bit with accountability, right? So it's the same as if a law is there, you can have the best laws, you included everybody, but then, you know, people see that the fines are never given. I mean, you know, never is going to happen. So one of the things we need to do is to ensure that there's enforcement, that again, at the bigger level, but also at the level of the company. So we need to have an accountability, enforcement, and making sure that people can see that the top management, the C-level, is involved. And I think there, again, there is a lot of companies that are doing a good thing with regards to also having external focus, going and getting external audits from third party audits of what they're doing, ethics boards, which I have also contributed to many of them. And that way you can, in the absence of very hard legislation, you can still come up with something that hopefully works and helps with building that trust.
Aisha, you've spoken a lot about some of the challenges and concerns, and I guess some of the way forward when it comes from a regulation and indeed enforcement perspective. I'm super curious, what do you think are some of the promising applications of AI, particularly for social good? Where can AI be used in a way that benefits society? And then, as a natural extension to that, what are some of the things that policymakers and organizations can do to ensure that it is used for good rather than for some of the question marks and the challenges that you've raised?
It's such a good question. And I must say that, I was recently at the AI for Good Summit. And one of my key takeaways was that framing is so important. So when we are actually looking at, let's say, AI, and I briefly mentioned this before, there is this whole race on setting up AI safety institutes. And somebody said, well, maybe we should not call them AI safety institutes, which we should just call them AI institutes, because essentially, AI certainly has a lot of potential to do good for this world as well, right? So I think we are very much focusing often on the risks, specifically recently, and when you look at, but there are many, many benefits. So, for example, AI's use in different sectors, such as healthcare, right? I mean, in terms of drug development, in terms of pre-identification of risks, in terms of cancer research, AI can contribute immensely to climate change and also to a certain extent managing the disruption, forecasting for disasters, and that's something which is really being already applied today. Huge benefits in terms of access to food and productivity of crop yields, which has also been done very, very well, and many, many companies are doing that for Africa. Education is also something where AI can really, really help and is helping now in terms of access to education. So with sort of online trainings, the fact, just merely the fact that you can have translations in so many different languages and courses, and many companies are doing that, and specifically in Africa, and it actually, the list goes on. And what you really realize, if the research has shown that even each and every one of them can be helped through AI. So again, we have to keep that mindset, and we have to understand that this is very, very important. But again, going back, this will of course work if we ensure that we have the right trust in that technology to help for its adoption. So what we don't want is sort of any type of knee-jerk regulations, like we of course have seen in certain industries, where if you have no legislation, and then you have very heavy-handed, and I think financial industry comes to mind, that can then, you know, of course be helpful, but we don't want something like that. So I think that's the first part of your question. The part now is, yes, but how do we do that, right? And that's the billion-dollar question. So what do we really need to do in order to make sure that we go in the right way forward? And here I would say there are few things which would be my, you know, on my list of if I could really have a perfect world. The first one is that our political as well as legislative structures, I feel today, are still reflecting the last century. And however, we are moving into a very new world. And therefore, what I would like to see, and I think what we need to do quite quickly, is that we need to move away from the reactive rulemaking to a lot more proactive way of going towards this, even when it comes to governance and regulation. So we need this to be much more agile than we have. The second thing I think if we want to capture is, and I've mentioned that before, is capacity building. We absolutely need to make sure that we can only be successful if all actors in the society have the capacity to understand what the technology is about, and also to work with the technology, which is going to be key. And in order to do that, I think just a little point I'd like to make is that I do believe that policymakers, but also governments, do need to prioritize this topic and dedicate the right resources and focus to manage these disruptions, and to ensure, of course, that the benefits are distributed equally. And the very last point, which is extremely close to my heart, which is, of course, what Dragon Horizon is all about, which is what the AI Policy Summit is all about, is the point on dialogue and collaboration. I think we cannot go anywhere, specifically in the bigger global world, unless we have dialogue and collaboration, but also dialogue in collaboration between industry, policymakers, the social change drivers, the academics, because what we really need to do is to share knowledge and share expertise and share our ideas. And innovation doesn't happen in silos. So this is going to be really, really key. And we need to move forward and to really build the right future. And I think there, and that coming back, I mean, we closed the loop on exactly that's what I have been doing. This is what I am passionate about. This is what Reg Horizon is all about. And this is also what the AI Policy Summit is all about. And my only idea and my only suggestion would be that the more the people are involved, and it touches us all. It touches us as a parent, as a customer, as a business leader, as a citizen, we all can have a say, and I think we can, and there are structures that exist for us to do so. We just need to be mobilized to do so. So that would be my hope. And I think if we do that, I do feel very positive that we will have a great future for our next generations.
Aisha, we thank you. You've done a great job of helping us to understand what AI is, some of the challenges. We will urge everybody who's listening to this podcast to reach out to you and be a part of the forum, which I think is doing some amazing stuff. Thank you very much again, and we look forward to having you back on, because I think this is a topic we can talk about for hours and hours. So we look forward to addressing maybe some of the progress that we make in a lot of these areas in the near future. Thank you.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And that's been this week's episode of Put Simply. Be sure to follow us on LinkedIn at Oroku Group to stay up to date with all the latest episodes and news. Feel free to leave a comment and suggestions on what you'd like to see featured on the podcast as well. Until next time, I'm Erdem Koch.
And I'm Ozan Ibrahim.
Thanks for listening.